You're listening to the Charlottesville Podcasting Network at sevillepodcast.com. Lectures, radio shows, and more are available on demand at sevillepodcast.com. Now available through email. Sign up on our homepage. I'm Dan Daniels. John W. Martin, CEO of the Southeastern Institute of Research, spoke at the April 8, 2009 meeting of the Senior Statesmen of Virginia on the Older Dominion Partnership, an initiative by business, government, foundations, and nonprofits to help Virginia prepare for the coming boomer age wave. The ODP is an initiative created to raise awareness and advance preparation efforts across the Commonwealth of Virginia for the coming wave of older adults, when aging boomers are expected to double the population of citizens ages 65 and older. The ODP modeled an age wave plan where leaders in academic, nonprofit, state government, philanthropic communities, and businesses all join together to plan for their community's shared destiny. Our podcast is entitled The Older Dominion Partnership, How Virginia is Preparing to Ride the Age Wave. Following the presentation, questions were taken from the audience. Today's program was moderated by SSV Secretary Bill Davis.
It's really, truly an honor and a privilege to introduce our speaker. John W. Martin is president and CEO of the Southeastern Institute of Research in Richmond. And this is a 44-year-old marketing research firm that has conducted over 13,000, think about that, 13,000 studies for organizations like Media General, AARP, the American Chemical Society, Johnson & Johnson, host of Fortune 500 companies. John's also co-founder of the Boomer Project, and that's the nation's authority on marketing to today's boomers. The Boomer Project and its findings have been featured on NBC Nightly News with Brian Williams, the CBS Sunday Morning Show, CNBC, WSNBC, NPR, Business Week, Newsweek, Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, literally everywhere. John also co-authored The Boomer Consumer, which is an award-winning business book that was published in 2007. And John speaks across the country, literally weekly, to audiences about the age wave preparation, or the boomer tsunami, as it's sometimes called. And he talks on generational issues and understanding today's boomers. So today he's going to speak to us on the Older Dominion Partnership and the Boomer Project. The ODP is a public and private initiative created to raise awareness and to prepare the Commonwealth for the coming age wave of older adults. And that's going to occur when the boomers double the population of age 65 and over here in the Commonwealth. So we really need to start being prepared for that. John and Kirsten, incidentally, will be speaking, or they'll be featured speakers at the upcoming Virginia Forum on Age Wave Planning. And that's going to be held here in Charlottesville at PVCC on May 20th. And local leaders from all over the Commonwealth will be coming here to learn how to start planning for the age wave. The ODP is partnering with other age-related groups around the state and to put on this event, and Governor Kane will be participating also. So without further ado, I'm delighted to present John Martin, and I think John wants to show a little film before he starts.
They are 18 years worth of babies born into a post-war world.
Oh, look at the big money out there. What's old is new again.
50s will tell you that they're in early middle age.
It's all a matter of perception. The Virginia
boomers said that middle age starts at 48 and ends at mid-70s.
Matt Thornhill at the Boomer Project.
It helped boomers fulfill that quest for vitality in any aspect.
you will be successful.
When it comes to baby boomers, we have to think about where they are in the aging process. And they see the world sort of in shades of gray.
Increased sales and increased business by continuing to target this segment.
Their generation of folks born between 1946 and 1964.
I love being the age I am. From beauty spanking, Madison Avenue is finally getting the message.
Great to see you guys. I think we've got the sound coming in and out. So I'm just going to keep talking and be right here. We got a lot to cover today. I want to share with you a little bit about the age wave, what it really means, and its projected impact on Virginia. And while I'm doing so, if anybody has any questions during the next hour, please raise your hand and let's make this a dialogue and not a monologue. I'm going to get into what the Older Dominion Partnership's all about, why we created it a couple of years ago, and where it's headed. And why we think we're going to call it the ODP, that's our code for the Older Dominion Partnership, why we think the ODP is unique compared to some other initiatives going on across the country. And then we're going to get into our next steps on the ODP, where we're headed with it. And as Bill just referenced, one of the next steps is going to happen right here on May 20th in Charlottesville. We're going to have a community-wide event to invite all the folks across the Commonwealth to get together to begin age wave planning. And I will say this now, and I'll say it throughout. Charlottesville, because of people like you, have gotten a head start on all of this. You guys already have a 2020 plan, which was really the inspiration for the Older Dominion Partnership, the work that you guys have done already in this community. And on the 20th, you're going to be held up as a great example to the rest of the towns and cities across Virginia. So let's get started on this agenda, the age wave and its potential impact. Well, there's no denying it. This age wave is headed to Virginia, and it's coming. It's a couple of years off, but the reason it's happening is depicted on this chart. This shows our population in the U.S. by generation, and you've heard of Gen Ys or millennials, the youngest people today. Well, here they are, 80 million of them. But the generation that's a little bit older, sort of the young executives that you see around Charlottesville, 62,000 people, a much smaller generation. They're called Gen Xers. Then here are the boomers, 76 million. And then go on out, the greatest generation and the silent generation. Anybody in this room in the greatest generation? I've got two. How about the silent generation? Show of hands. Okay. Then how many boomers in the room? All right. Any Gen Xers in the room? Yay, Kirsten, okay. And do we have any millennials or Gen Ys? I don't think so. So we can really pick on these guys if we want today. Well, what's so profound about this chart is when you look at boomers, discount millennials. Don't think about these guys. They're still in school right now. Look how big this generation is. And what's going to happen as we look out into the future? Well, right now in Virginia, one out of every three adults is a baby boomer. Well, in my business and demography and doing studies, there's one thing that you can't argue against when you study generations and you look at the sheer number and you look at mortality rates and you project out in the future, you're going to say, okay, well, here are these boomers, 76 million, and here's the golden generation, the seniors, silent generation, and GIs. Well, what's going to happen over time? These guys are going to replace the silent generation and the GI generation. And so you've got a much bigger segment of our society replacing what's a smaller segment, a smaller generation. And so there's no denying it. In Virginia, our population is projected to grow to 1.8 million seniors, 65 plus, by 2030. So 19% of our population is going to be seniors, 65 plus. Today, it's roughly around 11%. So that's the doubling of our senior population because of that huge baby boomer size generation, replacing a much smaller generation of seniors today. So by 2028, one out of every three people in Virginia is going to be over the age of 50. We are going to look like a much older society. And there's a wonderful rock and roll band that was at its heyday when boomers were coming of age, The Who. And they talk about my generation, and one of their lines was, "I hope I die before I get old." Well, that's what boomers thought when they were young. But now we want to stick around because it's a pretty good ride. But a lot of people, a lot of esteemed thought leaders and scientists and researchers are starting to look out in the future and go, maybe it's not going to be that exciting. This is a quote from Dr. Robert Butler. "I think they're in for a hell of a time because society's not prepared for them. And I don't think they're a bit prepared for old age. They're often fat, unhealthy, and they haven't been saving money. There aren't enough nursing homes or elder care facilities for them. Now the boomers could become a strong public group by virtue of their size. They have the political experience, and they may use it to create change. So that's what this presentation is going to be about. Are boomers going to use their political might and their know-how to bring about change, to sort of redefine what it's like to grow old in Virginia? And you guys are going to be the judge, and we'll come back to that question at the end. So what's going to happen? What impact is this age wave going to have on Virginia's future? Well, I think it's going to have a lot of impacts. I'm going to go through five of the biggest ones right now. And again, please stop me if you have any questions or if you want to challenge any of these. But the five biggest ways the age wave is going to impact Virginia starts with chronic disease. Think about boomers. We are getting older. And the one thing we can't cheat, even though we might live longer than the older generation today, we're still going to get chronic diseases. Anybody in this room know Dr. Richard Lindsay? Great gentleman, and he's with us on the Older Dominion Partnership. And together we've been working on projecting out the incidence of disease in the boomer population as boomers get older. And so when we look out, the number of people that are going to have arthritis is going to increase by 40%. Well, it makes sense if the senior population is going to increase. If it's going to double, you're not going to be able to fight off this disease. You're going to have more people having arthritis because you're going to have more people that are in that zone of getting it. Heart disease is projected to increase by 50%, the number of people who have it. Hypertension, stroke, 40% increase. Diabetes, 40% increase. You can argue with any of those numbers. The fact, the undeniable fact is we're going to have more older people, so we're going to have more people with chronic disease than we do today. And when you look at the number of chronic diseases that are projected for the 50-plus population, and we see this increase simply because we're going to have more people in the senior population, one of the things that's fascinating is you're going to have more chronic conditions and growing faster than the 50-plus population. And the reason is chronic conditions conspire. They start to work on you, and you usually don't have one. When you're older, you have one, two, or three. And so that's what they're projecting with this chart. So the implication is that our healthcare system's infrastructure has to shift from an acute care, hospital-oriented infrastructure to more of a chronic disease prevention and management structure. And that's going to take a lot of resources and a lot of thinking to make that shift happen. Number two, there may be a huge shortage of geriatric physicians and nurses. Has anybody ever heard Dr. Lindsay's presentation about this, where he sounds the alarm? I can't imitate Dick that well, but he does something like... And then he shows charts. He goes, who's going to take care of this aging population? This is the projected need of geriatric physicians looking out to 2030. And here's the actual numbers projected. And why is that? Because of the redemption, because of what they get paid, because of the reimbursement policies. They all have to change to attract their brightest minds into this practice because there's going to be a big demand for them. The same with registered nurses. There's a big gap between demand and supply. In fact, some people in Virginia have projected out there are going to be 22,000 new nurses needed. And this story, Dr. Lindsay does it much more eloquently than I, but thank goodness for him and running around talking to the people he's talking to say, wake up, we've got to do something now because you can't just build a medical school 20 years from now overnight. So the implication is the healthcare industry must attract and train a number of geriatric specialists, a much larger number. Number three, we're going to have an enormous shortage of family caregivers. That's a brand new word we invented. Enormous shortage of family caregiver workers. 9 in 10 boomers in our research say, I want to stay right in my home. I do not want to go to an assisted living facility. I don't want to go to some kind of extended care facility. I want to live at home. That's where their mindset is today. There's a problem when you just look at the math, back to our generations chart. Right here, you got 76 million people that call themselves the sandwich generation because they're raising kids, but they're also taking care of their parents. They're taking care of a much smaller group of people. 76 million people taking care of 45 million people alive who are older than them. everyone, at least in our research, 50% of boomers have said they have taken care of their parents or they are currently taking care of their parents. So half of this group is engaged in taking care of their elders. Look at this much smaller generation that's going to have to take care of a larger generation. The math doesn't add up. And so there is going to be a huge crisis of a shortage of family caregivers. There just simply aren't enough to go around. And why is that? Well, the GI and silent generation got married, stayed married for the most part, and had 4.0 kids per household, right? Well, then when boomers came of age and they got married, they started having kids, but only at a rate of 2.0 per household. So that's why you have that much smaller Gen X population. And it's just demography. You can't argue it. You can argue against any of the research studies we've done. You can't argue against the math of demographics and where we're headed. So the Family Caregivers Association, National Association, looked at all these numbers and created this formula and said that the 65-plus population is going to increase at a rate of 2.3% a year. That's how many people are going to become 65 and 2.3% a year. The number of family caregivers to help them is only going to increase at 0.8. So there's a huge disparity there. So what's going to happen? Well, the implication is that new industries are going to pop up to serve this shift from institution-based care to home-based care. And that's because boomers want to live at home. So that's happening already. One of our great clients that we work for is Home Instead, which is a companion care service. And they have 800 franchises across the country providing companion care for people to stay in their homes longer. Number four, we're going to see unprecedented demands on business and on most public services and infrastructure. Let's start with business demands. MetLife did a study and projected that right now family caregiving costs businesses $33 billion a year in America. And that's B for billion, $33 billion. And this study was done a couple of years ago. In a study that we did for the Richmond Chamber of Commerce in 2007, we had a question. We said, now, in thinking about your work, how important are the following to you with regard to your current employer? So we're asking employees, what do you think of your employer? How important are these kind of benefits? Well, no surprise, salary is the number one thing. And this research shows the top two boxes on a 1 to 5 scale. So in terms of importance, salary was rated very high. Company reputation, second. I want to get paid well, I want to work for a good company, and I want health insurance and vacation time, I want training. And look where family leave is. It's still a top tier of importance. That's because so many people today have to go and take care of their parents. Well, what do you think it's going to be like in the future when there are fewer family caregivers? They're going to be so stretched that this family leave is going to increase in importance, and that's what CEOs tell us in surveys we've done with them through the Older Dominion Partnership. It's like, oh my gosh, we got to really figure this out because we got to figure out how family leave fits in to our business practices. We're going to have to offer it. We're going to have to offer elder care on site even. So profound impact for the future. Business has a stake in our successful navigation of the age wave. Housing. And I'm sure you've had people come before you guys and talk about housing and senior housing. Our housing stock has to change. If we're going to have so many people living in place and living at home and not going to institutions, we're going to have much more age-friendly designs, and we call that universal designs. This was a great graphic put out by the Washington Post in an article, but it shows the universal home of the future, and it's all age-friendly. Instead of having steps to walk into, you have a slide walk that goes up a slope, so you don't have to worry about navigating with a wheelchair. All the doors are much wider than the current zoning requires or current building code requires. You have shelving that goes up and down with the push of a button in case you have to access it from sitting down in a wheelchair. You have kitchen counters that you can crank up and down. All kinds of innovations. But we have to force builders to build this in. So you've got to change your regulations and your policies. And so luckily some enlightened communities are already starting to do this, and some builders are already starting to see the future and incorporate these sort of sensible features into their designs. Transportation is another area that's going to have a big impact in terms of infrastructure. In our research, 6 out of 10 boomers said it's going to be impossible for them to stay in their current home if they can no longer drive. So they're already realizing that. Why? Because we built these suburban communities that aren't on transit lines right now. The research says 11% of fatal crashes involve drivers 65 plus. Well, think if you have twice as many older people driving. So projecting out, 25% of all fatal crashes in the future are going to come from boomers when they're 65 plus. That's unacceptable. And so we're going to have to do something about this. So our transportation system must include more choices. We've got to figure out transit and train people how to use it today. Number five, our community's overall attractiveness or competitiveness may be at stake. We're starting to see small communities in the Southeast form around making themselves attractive to aging boomers. They want the aging boomers that have money. Come here and we won't make you pay real estate taxes. Come here and we will put the right services in place and we'll show you. We're already putting them in place. And now there's even an association of counties where you can join if you're oriented towards attracting retirees and boomers. We think the pace of this is going to pick up. We try to monitor quality of life by asking people to rate quality of life in their region. And this slide shows the Richmond region. 7 out of 10 residents gave us a top 2 rating, a 4 or 5 on a 1 to 5 scale. So we're calling the Richmond's quality of life a 71. We did a similar study in Charlottesville, and we can share those numbers with you. But Charlottesville, and we also did it in Arlington, Charlottesville enjoys one of the highest quality of life scores that we've ever seen. And you guys know it. You're shaking your head. I mean, this is sort of Shangri-La. Well, think about what makes up quality of life. It's education. It's security of citizens. It's access to medical care. It's adaptable workforce. It's protecting the environment. Look down here on this list. Services for the aging population actually makes up quality of life. And the rating, it's a tier 2 rating now, but guess what's going to happen over time? This is going to drive up the chart in importance. I have been following these numbers for economic development purposes for about 25 years. Quality of life wasn't as important to companies 25 years ago for their workers. They just had workers. They weren't worried about it. They weren't really looking for knowledge workers. It was more manufacturing. Today's economy is knowledge workers, and it means having them be comfortable where they live and productive where they live. So quality of life is becoming much, much more important, and we're going to see this, services for the aging population, zoom up this chart over the next 10 years. And some companies are thinking about where they're going to move. And they're doing this kind of research, trying to figure out how is this community, how much do they value these sort of important things for the future. And I know they're doing it because they hire us to do this kind of research. So it's going to be so interesting as you compete against other communities to continue to be the best place in America for any age. You're going to have to make sure you're delivering on what's important to society. So we do this sort of assessment for companies and for cities and communities. We look at what citizens expect from their community, and we look at how a community is performing, and we assess it and do a gap analysis, and we plot what a community looks like kind of from a Harvard MBA business perspective, thinking about what's really important to people and how are you performing and where do you need to improve. Because if something's really important to you as a business, say to move to Charlottesville, and you're not performing well on that particular attribute, you need to improve it and turn it into a strength. If it's important, you need to be delivering up here. And so when we plot for Virginia and we look at all the different things that make up quality of life, Virginia's profile kind of looks like this. And we see our strengths are in medical care and education and workforce. And we go, gosh, if we really want to be a world-class community, we've got to take those things that are important because they're above this line and try to drive them into that upper quadrant. So we've got to make it safer for our citizens. We've got to improve our education and workforce and mobility. And guess what? Care and concern and services for the aging have to be improved too over time. And when we do that, we're going to be the world-class community that we've always been, actually. And we're going to maintain our leadership. So that gets us to, why the ODP? These five reasons and more, we felt compelled to get something started that could get all the communities to, quite honestly, catch up to Charlottesville in your 2020 plan. Because there was no master organization saying, look, the tidal wave's coming, let's do something, let's share our conversation and resources. So the solution was to create this thing called the Older Dominion Partnership. And what a great name, because people call us affectionately the Old Dominion. Well, they're going to call us the Old Dominion and mean it in about 20 years. And so we better get ready for the Older Dominion. And so we've created a business, an initiative by business, government, foundations, and nonprofits to help Virginia ride the age wave. And so in a nutshell, this is our elevator speech. I'm going to read it to you because this is what the Older Dominion Partnership's all about. The Older Dominion Partnership serves as an inspiration, catalyst, and independent platform for networking, collaborating, planning, and supporting Virginia's age wave preparedness. So think code, think tank. We are here to connect the dots for people and to share resources and point to best practices and get everybody engaged in this game because there's so much at stake. So what are our goals? Number one, build awareness of the coming age wave. You wouldn't believe this, but in a survey of county administrators and city administrators across Virginia, only 50% of them knew the age wave was coming. Nobody is focusing that far because we have become a society built on the crisis of the day. We're a crisis-driven society, and we've got a few of them now. And so we're dealing with them, but very few people are saying, but look at that forest over there. And that's what we want to do, number one. Number two, broaden pro-aging stakeholder groups. Just the mission of what you guys do is broadening the pro-aging stakeholder group. That's what we want to do, too. I've been to so many meetings when I look around and I just see the folks from aging services sitting in the meeting. I'm saying, where's business? We need to get the foundations involved. We need to get others involved. So that's what number two is about. Number three, help facilitate the creation and advancement of community-driven strategies. I hate being told what to do. What usually works is when it bubbles up from the bottom. And so that's what the ODP is about, inspiring the communities to do it for themselves with some guidance. Number four, support members through strategic coordination and possible alignment of funding sources. How can we leverage limited dollars? How can we point people to resources they're maybe not thinking about? Number five, help formulate a comprehensive long-term strategic strategy for the Commonwealth. You know, where are we headed? What do we want to become in terms of this age wave preparedness? Number six, and with a great help from Dr. Lindsay and a lot of the academicians that are part of this, document and report on our progress in preparing for the age wave. What are those indicators that we want to see that really show us that we've got a great quality of life now and we will have one in the future? Are we moving towards it? And so our code for what we're about is to make stuff happen sooner than later. Don't play catch up in 20 years. Predict the future by influencing it, by taking it in the direction that we want it to go in as residents of the Commonwealth. All right, so who's involved in the ODP? Well, we just got started a couple of years ago, but this chart really shows the strength of the ODP. It's the philanthropic community and foundations, it's nonprofit community, it's the academic community, business community, and the Commonwealth. And we started off small because what we wanted is to have representation from each one of these legs of the stool to get it started, and then ultimately to roll it out and expand it, which really starts on May the 20th. So let's go through some of the members here. The implementation team that we put together is on this list. I'm sorry the type is so small, but people like Helen Cockrell, who was the head of the Virginia Association on Areas Agency on Aging, and Cheryl Garland, and Gail Jaspin, Deputy Secretary of the Office of Secretary of Health and Human Services, and Dr. Lindsay, and Tom Silvestri, publisher of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. This is sort of the founding group to say, should we do this? And let's see if this thing will stick. Tom Silvestri, who is a great leader in Richmond, runs the Times-Dispatch and is a great visionary. He, in one of our early meetings, said, aging boomers will change forever what it's like to grow old in Virginia. The Older Dominion Partnership provides a glimpse into this future. And so Tom is now the chairman of the Older Dominion Partnership, our first chairman, because we're now a 501c3. And we've held most of our meetings actually at the Richmond Times-Dispatch headquarters. And we simulcast our meetings out on the web, and we have great participation and a lot of energy in trying to get us organized and pointed in the right direction to make stuff happen sooner than later. The academic community is really headed up by Dr. Lindsay, and he has called in his friends from around the Commonwealth, many who lead the aging centers at universities. And so they're involved. And here's Dr. Lindsay with one of his passionate speeches at one of the first ODP meetings, kicking it off. This is where he did the siren, which is quite effective. And then the business community, and this is the surprise, I think, to have the business community as early adopters getting this whole initiative started. And here's some familiar logos, I hope, to you of the folks that are involved in this. And one of our speakers was Hugh Keough, and do y'all know Hugh? Hugh heads up the Virginia Economic Development Partnership. He now heads up the chamber, the State Chamber of Commerce. Hugh allowed us to partner with him and do a survey of his members across the Commonwealth, CEOs of companies of all sizes. And he came to speak and look at that research with us. And at one of our meetings, he talked about workforce development and the aging workforce and how critically important knowledge transfer is going to be when you have all these boomers leaving the workforce, and how important family leave was going to be in the previous charts that I shared with you. And so Hugh is really behind us saying this is an important initiative to make sure we always remain competitive and that we take care of our workforce. The philanthropic community and foundations is probably another surprise for them to be such early supporters of the ODP, but if you think about it, foundations are sort of the tip of the spear. They have the luxury and the resources of looking out into the future and going, what do we need to do for our society? You know, how can we gently guide organizations that are serving us? And so there are a couple of foundations early on that got behind this. The Richmond Memorial Health Foundation has been the real inspiration of the Older Dominion Partnership. They put the initial money in. They had the vision to say, this is something important. This could have a profound impact not only on all of our grantees, but also our city of Richmond and the Commonwealth of Virginia. So this ODP is perhaps more of a product of this foundation than any others because they had the vision and the confidence to put their own dollars in it starting off. And then the Community Foundation of Richmond and Central Virginia, also a major player in this. And then the nonprofit community, AARP Virginia, the Chamber in Richmond, the Virginia Association of Area Agencies on Aging, United Way, and others. So just the early folks that got this thing started, and we think that this list is going to grow for each one of these categories. And then last but not least, the Commonwealth of Virginia. Two secretariats from Governor Kaine's cabinet are involved in this, Commerce and Trade and Health and Human Services. Marilyn Tavener, Secretary Tavener in particular, real excited and a huge supporter for the Older Dominion Partnership. And of course, Linda Nablo, Commissioner Nablo, and the Virginia Department for the Aging. And Linda's been a great inspiration for us as well. And we've gotten the attention of some elected officials. Y'all know Senator John Watkins. He was one of our keynote speakers, and he summed it up by saying the ODP is going to set in place a template for other states, for other communities to follow, and the only way it's going to get done is by the efforts of the communities you involve here. So he understands this whole idea. It's got to percolate up. We can't legislate it down. Do a plan. Get ready. Nobody told you guys in Charlottesville to do it. It just bubbled up from your organizations. So how are we getting things done? We have a work group structure. We have five work groups: building shared database, health and long-term care, community preparedness, civic engagement, and business readiness. I'm not going to take you through all five. I'm just going to give you a quick glimpse at some of the work Dick Lindsay's doing. Dick and the other academicians across the Commonwealth have been meeting. Kirsten's been dogging this group and helping them come together to figure out all the studies that have been done, all of the existing demographic information, and to identify the huge gaps in information and to figure out how to collect that needed information and to do another study across Virginia to really understand where we are today in terms of the quality of life of today's seniors, so we can market today, but then watch it over time as boomers move into that category and to see if we are, in fact, at least maintaining the quality of life or improving it. So this Shared Information Resource Center is going to have all of that information as well as existing studies, and it's going to be free to entrepreneurs, the media, businesses, researchers, and the like. This is some of the benchmark outcomes that we're tracking across different categories: healthcare and financial readiness, community readiness, civic engagement. All the reports and studies that we find, we're going to put on this database, and again, they're going to be available for free in an organized way. You just have to plug in the word you want, and up will pop the latest studies on a category. Number three, community readiness. This is the area that I mentioned at the onset. We have this planning symposium that's coming up on May the 20th, and we're going to have speakers there. It's going to be a full day, and we're going to share best practices, and it's really going to be a celebration about Charlottesville, because your best practice, you guys have a completed plan. When others are coming to learn what's an age wave about, I think you guys are going to stand up and look great. Dick Lindsay's going to be there, and he's going to share the shared database with everybody for the other communities. So I think one of the stars of May 20th is actually going to be Charlottesville and the 2020 plan. Everybody's going to go home with a copy of your plan. So you are a statewide model, whether you like it or not. Virginia's ODP is unique and promising. We think that we've put together something special here, and we're pretty assured of that because we've looked around the country and seen how other states and cities have done this. And they are following what we think is sort of a tired model. There are plenty of plans out there. Most of them came from an edict from the governor or the mayor. We have to do this plan. We have to turn it in by a certain date. And it becomes a notebook that goes on the shelf. And we've got all the plans that we can get our hands on, and there's probably a 3-foot stack, and read through them and looked at them, and we really see this common formula. It focuses on today's seniors, and it says, okay, well, this is what today's seniors need, and this is what the gaps are in providing services to them, and since we're going to have twice as many seniors, we're just going to multiply the gaps times two, and we need this much money to fix it. And that's what the document says. And then they turn it into the state government or to the city council, and the city council goes, well, this is great. Now we know what we need to do. Let's put this plan on the shelf because, wow, it has a lot of money attached to it. So it's really sort of that top-down planning, and it's based on today's seniors. The output is just an expanded list of needs. So we're trying to take on a different sort of perspective, and we think it falls into these three areas. This is why our ODP is different, why Virginia is going to stand out. The first is that we're doing this based on a coalition of the willing. The second is we're focused on the anticipated future needs of today's boomers, looking out how they are going to redefine growing older. And the last is that we're trying to figure out a plan that works for people of all ages. So let's get into this first one. Marilyn Tavner, this is Secretary Tavner, who's a real asset and jewel for Virginia in her leadership over the last 4 years. She was speaking at the one of the past ODP meetings, and she said, the silo approach used by state government is the old way. This effort launches a new way where all parties are involved that works for business, works for communities, and works for government. So she was delighted that her office didn't have to do this, start the age wave plan. But she's also delighted that her office is involved. So it's kind of a symbiotic thing, and I think one that has a chance to stick and help out when you look at a chart like this and go, wow, look at all these people that are on it from the get-go, especially corporations, because no other state has gotten companies to the table in doing their age wave plan, and Virginia's the first. Number two, anticipated needs of boomers, and this is where I'm going to have some fun because I was invited and told that I could have a little extra time. So I'm going to go into the bonus time for you guys and talk a little bit about what are the needs of boomers. Why are they different than the silent generation? And so put on your seatbelts a little bit here. I'm going to show some video, and I'm going to step out of my normal box and share with you some of the information that we talk about around the country. Boomers think they're going to live to 85 or 90. And the truth is, a lot of them are. Life expectancy, longevity is increasing, thanks to science and thanks to diet and thanks to our awareness about exercise. But there's a big generation gap when it comes to how boomers and today's seniors view quality of life. And I'm going to explain why. This is research numbers of having the silent generation and GI generation rate their quality of life for their region. What's the quality of life like in the region? So 7 out of 10 give quality of life a 4 or a 5 on a 1 to 5 scale. Now, boomers, how do you rate the quality of life of where you live in your region? Pretty statistically close in my business and research. So you could say that all the generations are kind of saying, yeah, it's pretty nice to live here. Now we said specifically, well, what's it like for seniors? And well, look what happened. The scores dropped a little bit for people who are in the GI silent generation, but look at the drop for boomers. Boomers, when they said, what is it like for seniors? They said, oh, I don't think that's what I want. Argue it all day long, that's what they said. They are saying, wait a minute. Now you've got to ask yourself, why are boomers such an expert on the quality of life of seniors, right? How could they be thinking this way? Well, Many boomers actually are inside the infrastructure that has been built for the current senior population because they're caregivers. In fact, 22% of boomers are current caregivers. Another 29% have been caregivers in the past 5 years. So that means half of boomers in Virginia are in the game or have that relevant recent experience. And so this is what they're saying is like, I want something different. Now, what do they mean they want something different? Well, there's a big difference in their expectations in the current infrastructure. And why is that? Well, remember, 9 out of 10 of them say, I want to live in my home, right? So let's get to that why. Why are boomers different than today's seniors? And this is where we're going to have a little bit of fun. We wrote a book a couple of years ago called The Boomer Consumer. We've done a ton of research on boomers trying to understand their attitudes, mostly for companies like Johnson & Johnson and big Fortune 500 companies to help them figure out how do you market to boomers to get their what? Their dollars, to get their money. This research, though, gives us some insights in how boomers view the current aging infrastructure. They're not ready to accept the current system. We look, and in our book, we talk about the ways to look at boomers is to look at them through the lens of psychology, sociology, and anthropology. And I'm going to go through each one quickly. And this is an interesting lens to look at any generation. Let's start with psychology. As we grow older, we go through 4 seasons of life. Age 1 to 20, it's spring, then it's summer, then it's autumn, then it's winter. These are about 20-year spans, basically. Well, as we go through these different seasons, what's important to us changes over time. We develop mentally. A 14-year-old thinks about things that are completely different than a 34-year-old, than a 64-year-old. So if you go through each one, you think about the springtime, it's really where everything is a fantasy. Everything is play. And when our kids say, hey, I want to grow up to be an astronaut, what do we say? Sure, that's great. Or I want to grow up and lead a senior center. Fantastic, you can grow up and do that. Everything's play and fantasy, and it all is going to work out. Then the summer of your life, when you're 20 to 40, the world is still sort of romantic, but you start to work. You're starting to becoming somebody, and you think the world's your oyster. You think you can still make things work out the way you want, and then you get into the autumn of your life. And here's where a switch goes on. And again, these are about 20-year spans, and this one, it's between 40 and 60 years old. You're working hard, but you start to search for meaning, and you realize that, you know, maybe it's not as good as I thought, but you start to think, who am I, and what's my life purpose? And then the last chapter, the winter of your life, it's the climax of personal development. And here, you're really making sense of it all. You're going through a reconciliation period, and you realize there's some good in every bad and some bad in every good. And you really can kind of, you know, compartmentalize things and try to really make sense of it. So we see people going through these 4 definitive stages. But what happens to you along the way is profound because you go through the first 2 and you're really oriented towards the needs of your social self. The second half of your life, you get to be oriented towards the needs of your inner self. And this switch happens like around 40 or 50, and you start to have this more inner focus. And let me show you by way of some of our research. We asked this question in a national study for the Boomer Project. Of these, which ones would you say is the most important to you in your daily life? And we just asked these words. Security, belonging, being well-respected, warm relationship with others, fun and enjoyment out of life, self-fulfillment, self-respect, sense of accomplishment. We sort of group these terms into 3 buckets, basic values, security, belonging, being well-respected, social values, and then internal values. And this is what the research found, that the basic values didn't change in importance no matter what age we asked people to rate these at. What we found is that social values decreased the older a person became, and the internal values increased. And so we said, wow, that shift is taking place. So older boomers are much more oriented towards internal values than the younger boomers or even the younger adults 18 to 39. So what we summed up is that you spend your first half of your life becoming someone and the second half of your life being someone. Does this relate to anybody? Can anybody feel like this has happened? And so we think this is a profound thing. And we work with companies like Lincoln Financial, which is a big insurance underwriter out of Philadelphia. And they know how to incorporate this kind of thinking into the way they sell themselves. Here's a TV spot to give you an example.
Hey, guys, y'all set? Y'all buckled in here? Bye-bye, Eddie.
So how was the first day?
You know, I think my dad was wrong. Maybe I do have a future as a ski bum.
Retirement isn't an end. It's the start of what you were meant for all along. So grab your skis and say, hello, future. Call your advisor about the powerful resources of Lincoln Financial Group.
So it's all about being someone, and it's about his internal values. Think about a BMW. When I bought my first one, it was what I was saying to my friends, right, when I was 26, 27. Now, it's about, I love the way this thing feels and handles. It's not about what it's saying to other people. It's what it's saying to me. It's how I feel about it. And I just sold my last one, now drive a Honda. But this is the profound thing. If you understand these seasons and you realize boomers, because of their age, have just started the autumn of their life, they aren't going to let this go for just 20 years and jump into this one. Boomers are going to do this differently. They're going to blow this out and make the autumn of their life run for 40 years. That's what's going to happen. And I will have a little fun with you in terms of what age means today. So how old do you feel you are today? Do the math. I want you to think about your actual age, and then what is your perceived age? How old do you feel you are? And this isn't high calculus. Just put your age here, and then how old you feel you are, and what's the difference? And while you're doing that math, take a look at this TV spot.
All right. Check. 3 8. Nice. Nice, sir. Full house. Ooh. Three 8. Want a little bit of. Got a little bit of. Just a little bit of. Just a little bit of. Oh, I was like, good gracious, ass, bodacious, flirtatious.
What's going on? Get back to bed.
Feel young again.
Centrum Silk.
Isn't that great? They can't play that in the U.S. They play that in Europe. But... So does anybody in this room feel older than their actual age today? Not many. Feel your same age? Younger. A lot younger, right? Well, in air research, we asked in a national study, and we figured out how old they were, what year were you born, then later in the survey, how old do you feel you are? Younger boomers, 40 to 49, and then boomers over 50. There's a 10-year gap in younger boomers, but the older you become, the bigger that gap gets. So here are the older boomers saying, I feel 14 years younger. So you see all these ads on TV, or you used to when we first got started, making boomers look like they're walking their dog on the beach and about ready to end their life, you know, and using a hip walker and all that. It's crazy because the people designing those ads are like 28 years old. Well, the boomers, we think we can date that 28-year-old. You know, we really have pushed out the autumn of our life. In fact, it's really the middle age of Aquarius for us. If you think about it, in our surveys, we say to boomers, when does middle age begin and when does old age begin? And boomers say middle age starts at 48 and it ends at 73. So where would boomers fall on this chart? At the beginning of middle age. And I will submit to you, we're going to watch this number get pushed out. Middle age is going to become 80. You know, it's going to end at 80. And that's because the way boomers think of themselves and because of their health, and that autumn of their life is going to go on. It's not going to be a 20-year run. It's going to be a 40-year run. So it's time to change some thinking. This used to be 60. Beverly Hillbillies, Granny was 60 at this point. This is 60 today. Goldie Hawn, right? Grandmother. So that's the first idea, the psychology. Now think about sociology. And sociology is sort of where you are in time and space relative to other people. Think about the silent generation and the GI generation. We used to live linear lives, and we were talking about this at lunch. You were a student, then you got married. Then you started your job, and guess what? You worked for the same company. You didn't, for you boomers in the room, remember when you said to your parents, oh, I'm switching jobs, and your parents went, what? What am I going to tell my friends, right? Because you worked at the same place and went up the corporate ladder, You got your first house, your children were at home, maybe a second house, your kids went to college, they didn't come back home. You know, they went off on their own job. And you pretty much stayed married to the same person, and then retirement was a line in the sand, and it happened at 65 that day. And you got a watch and a party, and then you went off. And that's what it used to be like, linear living, right? We now look at the life stages of boomers. We ask them in research, what term really works for you? All these terms work. You can be a grandfather on your 15th career and have a brand new baby in your third marriage, right? So all of these terms work for you because you live your life in sort of a cyclical fashion. So age, what used to be the key in a marketing world, if you give me somebody's age and know who they are, that's gone now. You've got to throw everything you know about age away and start thinking about life stage and lifestyles. And a lot of shrewd marketers get this, like Michelob beer. If this is your idea of a pleasure cruise, this is your beer. What a great ad. And I don't know how they got that guy's head on my body, but what a great ad. So you can be any age and be in a kayak, right? Anthropology, the last lens and the most important one, and the one I think everyone in this room is going to relate to. Remember the show The Wonder Years on TV? Well, it really was a play on the whole idea of how the world is such a wonder when you're like in that age grade, like 5 years old to 15, right? You haven't been, you haven't ended the innocence yet, and everything is just sort of an awe to you. Well, that's when you get the most impressions on your DNA wiring in terms of who you are because of those experiences in your wonder years. And so this happens for every generation, but guess what? When every generation comes at age, different things are happening in our society. So those defining events during your wonder years influence your generational values, and that influences who you are as a generation from the broadest sense. No way are 76 million boomers all alike. No way are all the Gen Xers all alike, or the generation, silent generation folks. But by and large, you can say very general terms that there are these common shared values and sort of a common who we are. So let's start with the silent generation, and I hope you folks will agree with me here when I take you through some of the profound things that were influencing your wiring. These are five images that should bring up some emotional content for you. But we talk about our unemployment now, and it is bad, and it might get to 10%, but it's not 25% like it was in the 30s. And we have a ton of social programs that are this big safety net for our society now that weren't in place back then. And so we spent 10 years in that New Deal throwing things against the wall, and everybody had to look out for each other. The needs of the individual were not important, right? The needs of society were important back then. So the individual couldn't be celebrated. We had to think of the needs of many outweighing the needs of one. And we had to put our trust in government because we didn't have anything else. We had to go and believe in the New Deal even though it wasn't sticking right away. And at the same time, we were in awe of our planet because discoveries were happening. We hadn't flown across the ocean yet. You know, and so all of these things were going on where we were saying, wow, we've got to trust the government. And guess what? The government came through. And then when it came time to go to war, we all said, trust the government. Let's go. And you guys in the room, thank you, that actually saved this planet from totalitarianism. I mean, it was amazing to put a military-industrial complex together and go win on two fronts and come home and not really talk about it. And not really talk about it the way people talk about things today. That's why you're called the silent generation. So what happened because of this, because of these kind of things, because of the Depression and the New Deal and the unknowns and World War II, you guys, your values are about dedication and sacrifice, hard work, patience, respect for the authority, duty before pleasure, honor, the needs of many before the needs of one. And what does that turn into? Dedication, loyalty, practical, dependable. That's the silent generation. That's your deep-seated underlying wiring. So that's looking at it through this sort of anthropologic lens. Now let's move a little bit forward and look at boomers when they were coming of age during their wonder years. Television arrived on the scene. The atomic bomb, Sputnik, Haight-Ashbury, JFK and Camelot, Vietnam, Mick Jagger, going to the moon, Martin Luther King, Easy Rider and the drug culture, Archie Bunker. And that gets us up to like 1973. We haven't talked about Watergate on here. And so those were some of the things that boomers lived through. And of all of those, the most profound were probably these five. There was a profound sense of patriotism when we came back, and deservingly so. Television arrived on the scene, and it wasn't huge. It was about this size, actually, in our living room. But it allowed us to be wired together like no other generation had ever experienced. We could watch the same five TV shows, right? And what were they? They were all positive TV shows. They weren't a lot of negative shows like we have today. This guy arrived on the planet, not from Star Trek, Dr. Spock, but a famous pediatrician that wrote a book that's still a bestseller about how you need to work on a kid's ego and sense of self and self-esteem just as much as you work on their health. And that was a new way of thinking, to get the kid out of the kitchen and sit him down at the table, the dining room table, and to really work on kids and really teach them they're really important at an early age, as opposed to just listen. You know, an earlier generation might have said, you're here to help me on the farm. But this generation, for the first time, is saying, no, you're really important. What would you like us to make for dinner tonight? And then we went to the moon when our president said, we're going to get there. And we did it. And we lost a few along the way, but not as many as we now realize we could have, looking at how crude our technology was. And then when we saw institutions that we didn't like Vietnam and Watergate, we stopped them. And so think about these experiences, these defining events, in terms of the birth of television and the Cold War and Watergate and the growth of suburbia and the profound richness that America enjoyed then, and our generational values that came out of that was entitlement, control, personal gratification. We invented the 60-hour work week. We don't accept the status quo. If we don't like something, we change it, because we saw we could do that as a huge generation of 76 million people. We've always been in control because the world has catered to us, so it's always put us in a position. So exactly opposite from the silent generation, here the needs of one outweigh the needs of many, because the world was catering to us, telling us we were special from the very beginning through Dr. Spock. So we also realized that the next day was always better than the last day. Profound optimism. Even in our research right now on everybody's 201Ks, they've shrunk, right? People are still saying, yeah, I got time. It's going to come back. Boomers. The silent generation folks, they're saying in our research, told you so. We should have kept it underneath the pillow, right? Because that was their wiring back then. So who are we as boomers? Well, if you want to sum it up, we're driven, we're transformational, we'll change things if we don't like it, and we're self-centered. Not selfish, but self-centered. And does that make sense to any boomers in the room? I hope I haven't besmirched our reputation, but these relate to me. So driven, transformational, self-centered. So to put a period on this, think about all the things that have happened in our society. All the things that our founding fathers, like Jefferson, really dreamed of, right? And these weren't true when they wrote that document, but boy, have they really come around in the last 20 or 30 years. And I would submit to you that boomers, while we might not have been the leader of every one of these societal revolutions, we were the foot soldiers. And so we really have taken America a long way in just a short time because of our wiring, because we said we can. We have, and we will, and we do. It's really quite profound as a movement. So in a nutshell, we feel younger. We're more inner-directed now, not old yet. We're sort of in a lot of different life stages, and we're driven, self-centered, and optimistic. So with that lens, we're different than the silent generation. So when you think about the infrastructure we have in place now, the silent generation and those that really need the infrastructure are accepting of it and saying, yes, thank you very much. You're providing something and not complaining about it. Whereas boomers, when they get exposed to it, they're saying, no, I want something different. I want something better. What about me? And so that's what their wiring is about, and that's how they're going to force more changes. It's quite phenomenal. So the three reasons why we're important: understanding boomers today and understanding how they view aging services is critical, in a different perspective that Virginia is using than other states and other cities. Number three, the ODP wants to make Virginia a great place for people of all ages. And this is the third pillar of why we're unique and different. The programs developed for older Virginians can work for younger Virginians or all Virginians. And this is an idea that really came right out of y'all's 2020 plan. You guys were brilliant in figuring this out as a society and in talking about it. I talk around the country about this in terms of this metaphor, good grips. This was invented by a couple. The first day of this guy's retirement, he worked for an appliance company. He was sitting across from his wife wondering, what's he going to do in retirement? His wife is peeling potatoes with an old peeler, and she throws it down, and she goes, oh, my arthritis is killing me. I wish they would make something with a good grip. He goes, huh. Picks it up, and he looks at it. He goes, I'll be back. Goes to the basement, takes a broom handle, drills a hole in it, sticks the thing in there, and brings it back up to her, and she goes, this is awesome. Now they have 500 SKUs. They're a national company, and how many people have a good grip appliance? Right? So designed for an old person, but works for everybody. Red Bull drink. Designed for a young person. How many of you guys have Red Bull in your closet? No one. You design old, you get young. You design young, you don't get old. So that's the whole idea. So that's what we hope with our AgeWay planning, that if we can design for older folks, for aging boomers, it's going to improve life for everybody. And there are examples everywhere. One comes from Swampscott, Vermont. They needed to build a high school, but they had a limited budget in this little tiny town, and the seniors wanted a new senior center. So what are they going to do? Well, some very wise, Solomon-like civic leader up there stood up to the microphone one night and said, let's build both in the same building. So they built a new high school and senior center, and it looks like this. But they didn't realize that after they built it, they fell on hard times, and they had to close the library and the high school. Well, guess what the seniors said? We're going to keep it open. We're going to volunteer and run the school's library. And you guys have examples right here on Hydraulic Road and all the things that have happened with JABA and that assisted living facility and the daycare center right down the street. Once you put in a crosswalk, a lot of cross-pollination happened. We need to find other examples like this and bring them to life in Virginia, because we're paying off what this guy said a long, long time ago as such a brilliant, brilliant visionary. The web of mutual obligations between generations is essential for a civilized society. He got it down. So that's where we're headed, and that's where we talk about in the last chapter of our book, that we have to have more intergenerational living, and it's already happening, unfortunately, because of financial consequence. But we're seeing more and more people going back and living at home and more generations in a family unit. And what it causes is an understanding of what everybody needs and a working together. And that's what these AgeWay plans have to figure out. You guys instinctively knew it as sort of the intellectual giants of Virginia. We've got to teach other communities around the Commonwealth that we're not talking about an AgeWay plan for aging boomers. We're talking about an AgeWay plan to make the quality of life great in our communities for people of all ages. That's really where we're headed. So those are the three things that make us different in Virginia in terms of what we're trying to do. Just one more minute in terms of where we're headed. I can't tell you how important this event is, because it's our strategy to take what we've learned in our organization and now start helping communities across the Commonwealth. And that happens on May 20th at Piedmont Community College. It's a full day event. Everyone in this room, you can go and register and go to this event. It's $25. You're gonna see experts from other communities in Virginia sharing what they've done. You're going to hear Dick Lindsay talk about the research database that he and his colleagues have built. You're going to hear Tom Silvestri share what some of the other things the ODP can do. You're going to hear from the director of our Chamber of Commerce in Richmond, Kim Schuler, talk about what it was like in his previous job when he was the head of the chamber in Tampa, Florida, and what it was like there having so many seniors in their population and how you have to have a different kind of perspective. And everybody that comes is going to go home with your 2020 plan as an example. They're going to go home with four toolkits from people like AARP and the Viable Futures Toolkit that JABA helped inspire. And we hope at the very end we're going to have a wonderful reception, a wine reception, still for the $25. And people are going to be able to, for the first time, go, I get it. And I want to be like Charlottesville. And they're also going to go home with a copy of our book, Boomer Consumer. So it's quite a deal, wine included for $25. But this is what's going to happen right here on May the 20th. And anybody that wants to go, just please sign up. This is not open to the public. This event really is for the community leaders of the cities and towns across Virginia, the people that head up the chambers of commerce, the people that head up the PDCs, people that have the community foundations, and others. But The folks organizing this conference said we could extend this invitation to you since it's your hometown. So if there's a reporter in the room, please do not say this is open to the general public. So in a nutshell, where are we headed with our strategy? Well, we wanted to build this initial coalition of the willing. We wanted to get going and create sort of a performance monitoring system. We want to educate and empower local localities, Virginia localities, get this planning started and make sure that everybody understood that it's local. And through this planning and getting the local folks involved, what's going to happen is we're going to ultimately get members of the General Assembly involved because they're going to be hearing about it locally. They're going to be participating in it locally. And at that point in time, what we're hoping is that short term or mid term, maybe in 2 or 3 or 4 years from now, we can potentially create an incentive program to encourage communities to move faster. Do y'all remember the economic development program? They got people to be economic development certified. You know, when you're riding down 64, you see a sign that says Louisa County, an economic developed certified community. Well, that was done about 15 or 20 years ago by our state's economic development partnership. It was called VDED, back then, the Virginia Department of Economic Development. And they wanted to make sure all the communities across Virginia were at a certain minimal level of preparedness for industrial companies to come and locate. Did they all have plumbing and wiring and sites built for industrial development? Well, that worked because it really certified all the communities across the Commonwealth. It really incentivized them because the Virginia Department of Economic Development said, we're not going to come and bring a prospect to your county if you're not certified. Well, boy, did counties start to get certified fast. Well, dare to dream, what if something like that took place for helping localities get age wave ready? What if there were some kind of incentive? So as part of the ODP, long term, we want to study that opportunity and hopefully engage the General Assembly at the appropriate level and really make this thing work for everybody and really make Virginia the shining example for the whole nation on how we're doing this. So keep in touch with us. You guys have been a delightful audience to bear with me. You can go to the Older Dominion website and see all of our updates and read about us. It's olderdominion.org. You can subscribe to our newsletter. It comes out twice a week, and we talk about what other states and cities are doing. We profile people on the Older Dominion Partnership, and we capture the essence of all the meetings that we have. And you can sign up for this on our website, olderdominion.org. Thank you very, very much.
We've got time for a few questions, and I'll give it to John and let him answer them. And we will close at 3 o'clock, as we always do.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Martin, I'm Dr. Peyton Weary, retired chairman of dermatology, and I have a project for you. Several years ago, first of all, the University of Virginia has probably the most sophisticated telemedicine program in the United States. And several years ago, working with the people over University Village, which is a condominium for older people, we began to talk about how possibly we could link the university telemedicine program with also using town physicians with the people over at University Village. The problem was that telemedicine, while it is being supported in rural communities, at that time was not being supported by Medicare or any other government agency for people in urban settings. So we really didn't have much of a enthusiastic support from the people over there. But I believe that if you're trying to keep people in their homes and in their retirement communities, places like University Village or Westminster Canterbury or Colonnades, many of these places, and also in their homes, telemedicine would provide a real wonderful opportunity to do that. It's an amazing technology, and it's really been extremely effective. My project for you would be to see if you would be interested, or your organization would be interested, in trying to lobby to get telemedicine authorized for use in urban settings as well as rural settings.
Yeah, I think that makes total sense, and I think that's what we're trying to establish here is a forum for just that kind of insightful intelligence to come to the table, to marry up to people that can make that happen. You know, we are We don't lobby, but we're trying to make sure that the Virginia delegation understands the ODP and some of the issues. And so having that kind of information for us to package and as part of our plea to the folks that represent us in Washington, it makes perfect sense. In some of the forums that we have on healthcare and will have, bringing it to the table makes perfect sense. So I appreciate you bringing it up today, and I think, yes, there is a place for that in what we're trying to do.
Your plan, your whole discussion is based on demography and sociology and all of that, and it's really superb. It's far better than what I usually see from planners. You actually look into the future and ask what's going to happen.
Right.
Most planning agencies that I know about are concerned with modeling business as usual.
Right.
They don't model changes in the future, and you're actually modeling changes. There's a major change area that's left out of your study. And that has to do with energy.
Yeah.
Okay. At several points in your talk, you act as though you think cheap and plentiful energy will continue. And so you model senior services in the context that we know right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not going to work.
Right.
The truth is petroleum's going away. The truth is there won't be a traffic jam. The truth is that in the time scale you're planning, cars are going to become increasingly uncommon and less used. And that's going to transform what has to be done, like transit. And it also means that things like telemedicine are going to become essential. Also, those boomers are going to work at home, and their successors are going to work at home. So the whole caregiver paradigm is affected by that.
Right.
So I don't know. It's very tricky to model this stuff. But I believe that's a much closer picture to the world that you're worrying about than is business as usual.
Right. I agree with everything you said. In fact, what we're trying to do is create an agora of ideas and a planning forum that didn't exist before. That's really what the ODP is about. And to try to understand and shepherd the opinions, informed opinions of people like you, into more discussion and into more concrete plans. So I couldn't share everything today. One of the things you reminded me of, though, is we think in our work with boomers and urban planning and transportation, we do a lot of transportation studies, we think the future of development is not going to be around retail shopping centers, but around health systems. We think that just like Charlottesville and why you guys have such a great quality of life, you've got this huge health system that is, you've kind of developed around UVA and UVA's kind of developed around you. But in the future, we're going to see health system complexes being built in multi-use housing on top of retail right around that health center. So you're not going to have to go very far. And it's going to be a great thing because we're going to all need it. But thank you for your comments. You're right. Right. You're exactly right.
Your numbers that you gave for each generation,
yes,
they appear to be static. But what about the number of people that are going to be dying in each of those generations?
Yes. And we also are not including immigration. And we're going to have to turn up the knob on immigration because the numbers don't work in terms of being able to take care of aging boomers with that Gen X generation. So you're going to find a lot more. We're not going to be able to stop immigration, not that we would want to, but we're going to have to keep it going for workers. But you're exactly right, and so you've got to factor in all of that. When we were showing the number of people in the silent GI generation, for example, those are the people that are still alive, that 45 million, but they were larger generations at that time.
Thank you. One of the things I didn't think you all included was, you know, you're a think tank group, fine. You know,
right.
Who's going to pay for it? I mean, already I'm getting priced out of my house in Albemarle County. The taxes go up, up, up. You know, the phone goes up, up, up. Everything goes up, up, up.
Another great question. And I want to make sure that in my description of the ODP that we didn't come across as the folks that are going to deliver the definitive plan and all the answers, right? What we need to do is get people focused on this issue and get the right people at the table and some big thinkers like Dr. Sheldon Retchin, who runs MCV, part of VCU, but he runs the health system, and others thinking about issues like this and identifying them and then getting the right people at the table to address them. And so what we're really hoping is that we've created a planning forum that can make sure the right issues are on the table and we can get the right experts there. And one of the wonderful things that have happened to me and a theory that I really believe in and run my life around is that the road is the way. And if you're not on the road, you're not going to meet other people and you're not going to make things happen. And so if we let ageway planning take place in the silos that represent the aging industry today, without other thinkers at the table and without getting the folks in the aging business talking to each other, we're not going to ever have a plan. So the ODP is not going to deliver the definitive blueprint that will be our roadmap. What it's delivering is the marketplace for exchange and ideas and discussion in broad tenets of belief on what we have to do. Like, for instance, we don't have enough funding. We've got to figure this out. We've got to team up with other lobby individuals and make sure we're influencing the future flow of reimbursement to get more people into geriatrics, that kind of thing. So thank you for bringing it up. Yes, it's a key area, just like the other suggestions. Hopefully, with smart people like you engaged, we're going to make sure all these issues get discussed and put the right people on them.
You mentioned $25 for the May 20th event. Yes. What is the cost of the e-newsletter?
It's free.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say how much I appreciate having heard you this afternoon. I was planning to stay home and take a nap. But I'm glad I didn't. And I came here and I found out that maybe I should go back. I've done about 15 or 20 different types of careers in my lifetime. And go back and plan on what I need to do next. And I think that all of us are, there are only a couple of us here in my generation. There's Francis over there. I know Francis is in my generation. And what are you going to do next, Francis?
Well, thank you guys so much. It's really been a pleasure. Okay.
Glenn, that was great. Thank you so much.
For the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, I'm Dan Daniels.